Hola, babes, and welcome to Sex and Sensuality for Church Girls. I am your host, Lou Selenia. I am so grateful to have you here as we rebrand from the Radiant Sessions to Sex and Sensuality for Church Girls, because this season and moving forward, this is what we are going to be talking about. We are going to be deconstructing our beliefs, our thoughts, what we've been taught in church and by religion about sex and sensuality and how that impacts us today, how we can heal from it, how we can expand our mindset beyond the programming that we received as children, as teens, as adults. For our premiere episode, we are going to focus on this month's theme, which is Sexual Health Month, according to the World Association for Sexual Health. Let's talk pleasure. Now, oftentimes when we're talking about sexual health, pleasure isn't something that is included in those conversations. Typically, we're focusing on getting tested, having safe sex, using contraceptions, using birth control, all the different kinds of contraceptives that people can use in order to be safe, having those conversations with our partner or partners in order to have informed decisions about our bodies and about our sexuality. And all of that is important. But pleasure is a very important component to having a healthy sexuality. I would also add that pleasure is important in having a healthy life. Quite frankly, it's also not something that is talked about in church, at least not in a positive, healthy way. I was raised partially with my mom, who is an elder in the Lord's church, and with my Puerto Rican grandparents, who were pastors and preachers. My grandmother's missionary, evangelist. My grandfather specifically was very, very strict. But outside of just the education that I received from them at home, the education I received at church about pleasure was one that let me know that I was supposed to stay far away from pleasure. It was dangerous. It was sinful. Anything that brought enjoyment to my flesh that was not church or God, worshiping God, serving the Lord, was not something that I was supposed to engage in as a young lady, and even more specifically, as a Christian. Why is that? Well, I believe that to some degree, at least, they thought that their intentions were good. Because there is a lot of potential for danger when you seek out pleasure just for the sake of pleasure. And not even just physically, because obviously, you know, with all kinds of diseases and STIs and all of that, absolutely that is dangerous when we're talking about our sexuality. But even science will tell you that those who are hedonistic, in the sense of they're just seeking pleasure for the sake of it, aren't really happy or satisfied with their life. And that's just as dangerous to me as contracting a disease that has no cure. But what is also dangerous is the absence of it altogether. And there's actually a term that I learned in doing research where, for various reasons, depending on the person, they actually aren't able to experience pleasure. Anhedonia, A-N-H-E-D-O-N-I-A, is the condition when one can no longer feel pleasure, and it's a key symptom of neuropsychiatric disorders. So science will tell us that they might want to get something and actually go get it and be motivated to get it, but when they have it, they won't experience pleasure from it. This can oftentimes exacerbate the neuropsychiatric disorder that they're experiencing because something in them is telling them, I should feel joy in this moment and I don't, and really trigger a deeper experience in the disorder that they have. And it concerns me that there are people like this. And then there are people who have the full ability to experience pleasure and feel or have adopted the belief that in order to live a Christian holy life, that we are to silence those desires. And quite frankly, I don't think it works. Because either way, you quiet something that is natural in us, and or you pretend that you're quieting it and you experience those things in secret, and often secrecy is what is breeding the feeling of shame. And then when you get around people that you don't want to judge you, you put on this mask, and it creates a resentment that in a lot of ways you're choosing, but you're choosing it because you feel like you have to. Now, pleasure isn't just the enjoyment of a thing. It's actually a cycle, and it's made up of three different phases. So you have the liking phase, you have the wanting phase, and then you have the learning phase. So in that pleasure cycle, before you even get it, before you even touch it, taste it, see it, there's something that is triggering a desire in you. You know that it exists, it's out there, and to some degree or another, you know that you are able and capable of experiencing it. And then you go into the wanting phase where now you're trying to find ways to actually get what you want. Your brain is telling you that something in your environment needs attending to. And that item, that thing, that experience is going to meet that desire. And so you'll get motivated to achieve it, to experience it, to have it. And then you get up and you go do it, or you go get it. And then as you experience that thing, and maybe you enjoy it, or maybe you don't enjoy it as much as you thought you would, and that's where you get to the place where you're able to learn from that desire and either how you can obtain that pleasurable experience again because it was so good, or you're able to learn how you can make it more pleasurable because it wasn't as pleasurable as you wanted. Now, I wanted to really go over that cycle because you can definitely apply it to so many things. Because, of course, this is Sexual Health Month, so that applies to sex in so many ways. It's also important to know, especially sexually, that in that cycle of pleasure and the liking and wanting stage, especially when you are dealing with wanting pleasure from a specific party, a specific person or persons, that consent is so key. And in that moment, again, it is a learning experience that I still want this thing, but I am not able to get it from this person, and that is okay. I now need to figure out how, in a very healthy and consensual way, I can obtain pleasure either by myself or with someone else who wants the same thing I do. And almost as important, if not maybe even more important, to be able to give ourselves permission to desire and experience pleasure without the shame and guilt that often accompanies those experiences because of what we've been taught in church. And again, for me, no one said you can't have fun, but it was implied in the things that I was not allowed to do. I was not given permission to do. The way that I dress right now, and I dress in a way that makes me feel good, because I am not harming anyone in wearing something low cut and you see my cleavage. I'm not harming anyone by wearing lipstick, wearing makeup, by dyeing my hair or wearing nails, fake nails, coloring them, painting them any color that I want. This is something that I do because I enjoy it sensually in my body. I look good, I feel good, I smell good, and it is for my enjoyment. And to be very honest, there are others who also find it enjoyable and find pleasure in seeing me and experiencing me and my beauty and how I adorn myself. All of those things were things that I was told I was not supposed to do as a Christian woman because it was sinful, as opposed to putting the responsibility on the person who might consume me and want to have me and feel entitled to me. The woman, the girl, is told that she is supposed to change herself and or never even allow herself to open those doors, because if she does, then a man is going to sin. Except that's a lie, because any man or woman or person who is going to attack you, violate you, does that regardless of what you wear, regardless of what you do, regardless of how you show up, because it is strictly their choice. Women every day across the world are contorting themselves to fit into boxes, denying themselves pleasure, denying themselves enjoyment because of these things that we have been told that we are not supposed to do and supposed to be, and still are being violated. And so, How do you do that? How do you begin to deconstruct pleasure in your own life, sexually and otherwise? Do you even know what you want or what you like? Remember that three-phase cycle of pleasure: liking, wanting, learning. Do you even know, are you in tune with yourself and with your body to know what you like or what you want? And if you do, ask yourself the question, do you feel guilty or ashamed or both or something else that feels negative about that thing that you desire? Why is that? Why do you feel guilty for wanting to experience that? Does it harm anyone? If not, then what is the problem? What is the holdback? What is the challenge? What is the stumbling block? And if it is what you've been taught and have adopted as a belief, then what can you replace that belief with to unlock the door to pleasure in your life? The pleasure is important to me and to my practice of sensuality for various reasons. One, pleasure is like the flowers in a garden. It is the colors of the sunset. It is the sunrise over the ocean. It is those things that bring so much color and vibrancy and radiance, forgive the pun, to life. How can and should we go through life experiencing so much hurt and pain without not allowing ourselves to experience the other end of the spectrum of those things? One of the ancient philosophers, Epicurus, from the Hellenistic period, says that pleasure is the absence of pain, and that one only chooses pain when more pleasure is going to come from it. Now, of course, I am not advocating for a hedonistic life, because in its own way, pain has its own version of beauty. But again, I believe that because in learning, remember the cycle of pleasure where we get to learning, that we can also use that cycle to learn from our pain in order to teach us how to experience more pleasure. Just for the hell of it, just for the beauty of life, but also because pleasure to me is another language in which I am also able to learn myself, learn how and when I am in alignment. It is a frequency that helps me in my manifestations, that when I can match the frequency of that which I desire in the spirit, I then can bring it into this reality and experience it this in this reality. Why? Because in the spirit realm, everything just is. It is eternal. In our reality, we live on this timeline that is marked by seconds, minutes, hours, days, months, years, etc. And when we navigate ourselves in this timeline, but realize that we are not bound to the constraints of this time, pleasure has helped me to speed up those manifestations in that way, because I am essentially allowing and communicating to spirit, to the universe, that I am ready, that I know it, and I am it. So join me on this quest to allow, to invite, and to experience more pleasure sexually, single or otherwise, but in life. You deserve, we deserve pleasurable experiences. It is now time for some church announcements. This week, we had a new movie that was released in theaters and on Peacock, if you haven't heard. It is called Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, starring Sterling K. Brown and Regina Hall as Lee Curtis and Trinity. Now, if you have not watched it, you may want to pause and come back to this if you do care about some spoilers. Peacock has it for $1.99 for the month, so you can go and stream it. It's really quick. It is a satire, so the humor, it may not be like ha-ha funny to you, but there's so much commentary in that movie about the Black church. You have to watch it. Just watch it. And come back. Okay? All right. Ready? So there's so much to talk about, and I'm not going to dissect everything. But in the vein of sex and sensuality for church girls, I have to talk about Trinity. Regina Hall acted her ass off in that movie, and the writers and directors did such a good job of depicting a very real experience for so many women in church, first ladies or otherwise. Now, obviously, I have never been a first lady, but I was raised by one, and I have been close to many preacher women, talked to them, even counseled some of them. And so it can be an uncomfortable thing to watch. And I can imagine that a lot of people will be triggered and will be angry and about the filmmakers' choices in this movie. But again, if you know what satire is used for, then this was a perfect way to use the art of film to bring up certain topics that deserve discussion. So first I want to bring up the scene where Trinity, Regina Hall, is in bed with her husband. And she reaches out to him for a bid for affection, for some sexual connection, and he immediately flips her over. And when she requests to be flipped back over onto her back and to do missionary, he's not able to perform. And there's a moment of awkwardness where they're just both laying there, and then he turns to her and asks if she'll do the thing. And she performs fellatio, and clearly she's good at it, and he loves it. He covers his face. I don't know, sidebar, why do y'all do that? Why do y'all be so, like, seemingly, it seems like you're ashamed of the face that you're making when you're receiving pleasure. I've been wanting to see your face. Show me the pleasure that you are experiencing. Make a noise. Like, don't just lay there. I'm putting in work. Okay, back to the movie. But yeah, so he, you know, he has his orgasm. He releases. She comes back up and back to being awkward and just laying there. And obviously, there are so many reasons why a man may not be able to perform. And I do not want to shame anyone that has, you know, health issues, you know, mentally or physically or otherwise. But if you watch the movie, and I won't give away the plot, but if you watch the movie, you eventually learn that there's, you know, what's going on and why the likelihood of him not being able to perform in that way occurred. But it's so sad that regardless of his reasons, that he essentially would use her in that way. And even if you couldn't perform for a quote unquote legitimate reason, that you would not want to please your wife, who clearly wanted to connect with you sexually. And how okay it was for him that he got his, and that's all that matters. And statistically, we know that even outside of the church, cis heterosexual women are at the bottom of the barrel of the orgasm gap. We are just not having as many orgasms with our partners or otherwise than the men in those same relationships, women in lesbian relationships, or men in homosexual relationships. It's just not happening. And there's more than one thing for me in that situation, because it's the idea, again, that he is so self-centered and so selfish that he would focus on himself and not focus on the reciprocity of that moment. And you could really see in her mannerisms and in the energy that she was expressing in those moments, because there wasn't many words shared, that this was not the first time. This was not an abnormality. This was something that was really, really normal. And she attempted to advocate for herself and ask for what she wanted, and she didn't get it. And so how many of us have found ourselves in those positions that you try to speak up and you don't get what you need, what you want, what you desire, and you lay there and like, okay, so do I keep reaching out? Do I keep asking? Or do I just let it go? I tried, and that's that. And so then the other side of that is not accepting that. Now, of course, I understand that that's not easy to do or to say. Just don't accept it. You know, there's so much there. You know, she's married and all of those things. But dare I say we start early. I'm not going to say that a married woman who's been married, I think she's been married for over 10 years in the movie, can't change the trajectory of her relationship, but it's damn near impossible if you're doing it alone. Now, you can change the trajectory of your relationship by yourself, and oftentimes that means that you're not going to end up together. You're going to end up apart because you go in your direction and they're going in their direction. But in order to stay married, and stay married and be happy and satisfied, it takes both people. But again, back to that piece of permission and deservedness. Like, if we walked into relationships knowing that we deserve, knowing what our boundaries are, and knowing how we are willing to show up, in relationships and what we are willing to accept, that before we put so much on the line and sign on the dotted line of a marriage certificate and purchasing homes and having children and building businesses and all of the things that in very real ways make it more difficult to leave because you're now even more invested in the relationship, that either one, he would know that this is not acceptable and wants you and wants the relationship so much that he or she is willing or they are willing to do what is necessary to make sure that both of you are getting fed in the ways that you desire and deserve and need, or you realize that this is not a match and you go where you're celebrated. Now, if you're the kind of person who just wants someone to have them, then that piece of advice won't really work for you. And this probably isn't the conversation for you. I wish you well. But if you are someone who is not just about coasting through life, but you are really intentional about the quality of life and the quality of relationships that you have, then knowing what you like, want, desire, and having the necessary boundaries in place in order to know how you are willing to function in the relationship and what you're willing to accept is absolutely important. That scene was such a cautionary tale. And we've seen it. We've watched it. We see these women that we may not know exactly what is going on in their bedroom, but it's also not hard to figure out because later on in the movie, she is on the street miming as they're holding up the sign saying honk for Jesus. And there's a moment where you realize this isn't just miming. This is her miming, but it's also miming the way in which she wears a mask as a woman, as a wife, as a first lady. And when you wear that mask in life, you are more amenable to wearing that mask in the bedroom and in other places. Like the way that, you know, she made the attempt and then just laid there like, I guess this is okay. Like that type of normalcy in her response to that obviously is something that shows up in more than one place. And that is why this is sex and sensuality. This is why it's about the bedroom and your life, because they are all interconnected. Now, I'm not saying that if you have a great sex life, that your life in general is great. That's a false equivalency. But I am saying that there are things to learn. There are connections that can be made from one to the other. And in this movie, you can see the thread so clearly. Even when Trinity sits down with her mother for breakfast on the sprawling lawn of their estate, and she's crying and telling her mother, I don't think this is going to work. And essentially her mom rebukes her and is telling her, put the mask back on. Put the mask back on. That's not your place. She's married to this man and her mom is telling her, it's not for you to know if it's going to work. It's messages like that that attempt to, and I say attempt because especially as adults, we have to reclaim our power to realize that we don't have to make the choice. But it's attempts like that that are telling us to, again, ignore our need for pleasure, for desire. Her body, her emotions, which are sensations in our body, is telling her something is wrong. I am not happy. I am not okay. I don't know how much longer I can take in this marriage. And her mother shuts her down. And so, again, on this journey of deconstruction, it's also so important to be careful of who we are trying to deconstruct in front of or deconstruct with. Because wherever they are, if that's working for them, cool. But oftentimes, they want their choices to be validated by forcing you back into the box. Because if it's good enough for them, then it has to be good enough for you. And if it's not good enough for you, then something in them is telling them, why would you accept that? You don't have to like that. You didn't have to accept that. Her mother's husband had passed away. And I can imagine, put myself in those shoes, that her daughter expressing her concern and her worry about her marriage and whether or not she can go on. And because she knows that her daughter is experiencing some of the same things, if not almost exactly the same things that she did in her marriage, and she stayed and she endured, and her daughter deciding to opt out or want, or even just the possibility of opting out was too much for her mother because she didn't. And maybe she doesn't want to heal. And again, that is her choice. But if you want to heal and want to embrace and allow, and if you want to embrace exactly what it is that you deserve, that abundant life that we talk about in church, it's not just financial. That abundance also includes pleasure, joy, happiness, enjoyment. We do not have to live a sacrificial life where we are surviving with little and just being grateful that we get the little bit that we get from people, places, things, experiences, in order to feel holy. Like, we have really made, you know, the Mother Teresa trope, which, you know, she's problematic. But, you know, that idea that, oh my God, these people are so holy because they have so little and they're so grateful. And yeah, we should be grateful. But the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. We were placed on this earth with unalienable worth and rights to be able to experience all of these things. Not again to be hedonistic, but to be balanced and in alignment. And you can't have that. I do not believe that you cannot have that if you are so entrenched in this survival gospel that tells us that we're just supposed to be in the trenches. Although the Bible says that no good thing will he withhold. So why are we accepting boring sex? Women, physically, we have an organ in our body that is only for pleasure. And if you don't use the clitoris, it can collapse and you will lose the ability of getting pleasure from that part of your body. Why else would God give us the clitoris if our pleasure was not important to him? Yeah, I thought so. So before we go, I want to invite you to a centering moment. A lot of what we're going to talk about this season on sex and sensuality for church girls can be really heavy. It is not easy to go back and interrogate the things that we've learned and how they've impacted us, how they may have caused us or been the catalyst for trauma. And so I found that it's important that we do some emotional self-care consistently and constantly as we're doing this work. So if you choose, get in a comfortable position, lay down, sit down, close your eyes, whatever you want, as long as you're safe. And just meditate on these words. Feel free to pause and write them down, or just be present and in the moment. I am deserving of pleasure. My health and wellness is not complete without enjoyment. Orgasms are my right. I invite and accept pleasure into every area of my life. I not only invite pleasure to receive, but I accept invitations to give pleasure when I desire and I feel safe to do so. So this has been season 2, episode 1, and I hope not only that you enjoyed it, but you got something from it that you can use in your life. My name is Lucilenia. Join me on Wednesdays for a new episode of Sex and Sensuality for Church Girls, and then Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern on Instagram at The Radiant Sessions for a live after show. Come with your questions, comments, concerns. Love to hear your thoughts and discuss pleasure with you. Until next week, as always, be as radiant as the sun.